Make the choice to begin anywhere in your life, and the journey has started.
We exist more than just to educate. We exist to also revitalize.
And along the way, you can inspire others and be inspired.
But now there's a new generation of scholars, and I am among them.
If you really want to know who you are and what you are capable of, Howard is the choice for you.
Take a moment. Listen to the stories by joining the president of Howard University, Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, and his guest on The Journey.
With more than 30 years of experience, he is a proven leader. He is a business-focused technology strategist. And what sets him apart, however, is his vow to mentor others. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is Associate Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Howard University, Mr. Jonathan Pearsall. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Frederick.
So tell our listeners a little bit about where you grew up and what were the circumstances of your childhood.
Yes, sir. I grew up in Northeast Washington, D.C. My mother's family is from Washington. I grew up in the Carver Terrace neighborhood. Went to Brown Junior High School and Spingarn High School, and then went into the Marine Corps after graduating high school. I've traveled quite extensively around the world, lived all up and down the East Coast in North Carolina and Connecticut, as well as overseas in Japan. But when I decided to get out of the military, I wanted to come back to Washington. This is where my roots are. My mother's family is from here, and so we have a long history here in Washington, D.C.
And when you were growing up in D.C. at that time, the opportunities around, I would think, computer science, et cetera, in the schools that you, in the public schools that you attended, probably weren't great. So what drew you to computers?
Probably not having them. So DC public schools, as you know, and many urban school systems were working on getting technology. But by the time when I graduated, they didn't have it yet. I fell in love with technology in the Marine Corps. I was a communications operator, so I managed radios, mobile radios, antennas, and things. So I learned about engineering and radio frequencies and things like that in the military. And so when I got out and went to college, I kind of gravitated back towards the technology business.
And obviously, getting in at that time, prior to this real burst of technology and those formative moments, as you've seen the progression, what do you think the role of African Americans and technology has been or needs to be as we move forward?
Oh, well, one, I think African Americans are well placed in technology today. You have many of your larger companies that kind of started the technology boom, AT&T and your IBMs, companies like that, the Verizon and the Bell companies. Many African Americans are in those industries today. And so I want to see in the future a stronger push of African Americans moving into technology, whether it's broadcasting or the space sciences or computers, and I think Howard certainly plays a critical role in that, and many of the universities with their STEM programs trying to encourage young people to get into technology.
And obviously the field as well is changing very, very rapidly. And when you look at the infrastructure, we have a major project here at the university that's being undertaken in conjunction with IBM over the next 7 years to really change our infrastructure. What is your assessment of what that infrastructure looks like, what it needs to look like, and the I would say the full scope of that project in particular?
Sure. So Howard's current infrastructure, it was grown organically, like many universities, where you have various departments under the provost and the chief operating officer, and other schools and deans have built small networks that we've tied together, which at that time was sort of the way to go. Now we want to have one large contiguous network where we can control security, where we can control what types of things come to the individual computers, like spam and things like that. So what we're building with the IBM partnership is one large contiguous network, centrally managed by ETS, but also flexible enough where the schools, departments, and other affiliate units, such as research, have the ability to do independent things, but still sort of be in the same network and have that control and allow us to sort of have the ability to control the security, which is really a big concern in higher education today.
And when we speak of infrastructure, I think this would give our listeners a sense of what we mean by infrastructure, because oftentimes when we think of cable and so on, and then you hear things about the iCloud and the cloud computing, et cetera. I think for our listeners, there could be some confusion as to why these major overhauls are even necessary, given where some of the technology is heading.
Absolutely. So your foundation is your network. It's the interconnectivity of all of your computers on the Howard network. The IBM project is focused on that. So bringing together all of the buildings on campus as one big network, all of our remotes, such as the West Campus, we're tying those together both physically with fiber infrastructure and then bringing in new switches that can be controlled as a fleet. So that we can control all of those switches in all the buildings. Most buildings have anywhere between 20 and 50 various switches on different floors to control all of the jacks and all of the computers. So that's the network infrastructure. But we also have business systems that allow us to do financial transactions, to allow us to control our HR personnel, as well as our student system, which is Banner. So those systems also need to be upgraded, and they are being upgraded as we speak, as well as having the ability to provide business intelligence, what they call it. So reporting and analytics and dashboards and information that allows decision makers to make good decisions here at Howard. So we're really focusing on three big pillars: the network, the business systems, and then providing that information to our leaders and to the president, as a matter of fact.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Jonathan Pearsall. He is the Associate Vice President and Chief Information Officer here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So to switch gears just a little bit, as you've laid out, you know, what that infrastructure looks like, but as we go forward into the future, 5, 10, maybe even 15, 20 years down the road, what do you see a major university like Howard University needing as far as technology, and where do you see that infrastructure going? In other words, would one of my successors be having a conversation about changing out the infrastructure in the next 10 to 20 years?
No. So with the IBM contract that we're running, this infrastructure that we're laying in place should set us well placed for about 20 years. It will need to be refreshed at that point because I'm sure technology speeds will have changed and so forth. Where I'd like to see us go in our strategic plan for the next 5 years is, again, focusing on those three pillars: the network infrastructure, which will last us a while, fixing our business systems and getting them more integrated so that the data flows naturally, as well as the business intelligence that I spoke of, having the ability to provide reports. Once we get through that first strategic plan, I envision the next strategic plan, so the next 5 years, is where we start to be able to do things like artificial intelligence. So taking artificial intelligence and strategically placing it in various workflows, in various decision processes, such as what students should we go after in what markets. Having AI be able to look not just at our institution, but all institutions and say, what has happened in the last 10 years and which students have been most successful in which programs, and have us be able to go and recruit those students.
And one of the activities I'm interested in is how we embed artificial intelligence into the curriculum. And you may have some thoughts about kind of where that is heading. It certainly helps with the business systems, but I give you an example. I think in medicine, I would like to see us actually teaching artificial intelligence to medical students, because in my opinion, medicine in the next 5 years is probably going to involve a lot of artificial intelligence in terms of predicting who responds to what drugs or what treatment. What are your thoughts about how we incorporate that, especially given your own educational background in this area? Of, you attended Georgetown and George Washington as well. What do you see a role for artificial intelligence in the curriculum at that level outside of computer science?
Absolutely. So artificial intelligence has no limits in what areas it can be applied to. It's really taking what was a normal human experience. So there's a problem, whether it's a medical problem you're trying to diagnose or whether it's an engineering problem, feeding that problem to the AI or the artificial intelligence, and then teaching it what the outcomes were. So the example I use is if you're doing automated automobiles, self-driving cars. The AI kind of sits in the passenger seat and watches what the human does and calculates that experience and says, so many outcomes when something came out in front of the car, the human braked or they swerved. And so over millions and millions of iterations, it learns what is the best outcome and is able to solve that problem on its own and at some point drive the car. The same thing would be happening in medicine. So a doctor would do a diagnosis, We feed the AI with all of the diagnosis for those symptoms, and over time, it will learn what's the best outcome. But the thing that we have to be aware of is that you still need humans to make the final decision. The AI is simply giving you the ability to have predictive capability and know what so many iterations of this same thing, what the outcome was. And so I see that in recruiting, deciding what students we're going after and in what markets. I see that in our engineering, in our medical centers, in our pharmacology, and all of our other schools. There is a place for AI. And so where I'd like to see us go in the next, say, 4 years is start implementing various AI processes into our day-to-day lives.
Now, as we know, the military always seems to be ahead of the rest of the U.S. population in adopting and testing technologies, and obviously you had the benefit of that. But yes, to give a broader view of your military experience, tell us a little bit more about what you did in the military and how that shaped your overall philosophy outside of only technology.
Sure. So my primary job was a communicator. And so working with various communication systems and antennas and things, and we started using one of the first GPS systems. It was called PLARS in the military back then, which allowed you to get a pinpoint grid location on where you are versus where your enemy or where your objective is. And so we tested those kind of systems. We built antennas where we can find the enemy using radio frequency and direction finding where their communications are coming from, which gave us an idea where they were. So lots of communications technologies, as well as some digital and computer technologies. So went to several schools over the years and got to use it in real time in Desert Storm.
Okay. Yes. And as you look back now on that military experience and you look in the civilian world, especially with the gap, do you think that we are adopting these technologies quickly enough in higher ed and in general throughout the civilian experience?
Yes and no. So in the commercial space, so in your commercial markets, they adopt technology very quickly because they're looking for a competitive edge over their competitors. And so the quicker you adopt technology, the more efficient you can be in whatever area you're trying to target. Higher education, just as a cohort, is somewhat behind commercial space. We tend to be a little more risk adverse, and we want to see a few more trials of a certain technology before we invest, because we really can't afford to get it wrong the way commercial organizations can. And so higher education sort of sits in the middle of what we call the adoption curve for technology. We sit right at that 50% mark. We wait to see what commercial innovations hit the market. We let them work the bugs out, and then we adopt. I think we could be a little further ahead of that, in that because the higher education market is so competitive, we need to have a little more efficiency and a little more innovation than our competitors. And so I'd like to see Howard move their position further a little ahead.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, Howard, as we close, when I started as president, the most common email I would receive from a student would be a complaint about the network being down or too slow. The recent experience has not been that. I rarely, as a matter of fact, I can't tell you within the past year, maybe even 18 months, that I've received an email about that complaint. Mm-hmm. What is different today as you have come in and assessed in terms of the stability of the network and internet at Howard University versus what it was probably when I first started?
Sure. A lot of it has to do with the transformation that we're doing. It allows us to be more proactive, and so when things go down, we can dispatch technicians or do something from our keyboards that will allow us to fix the problem before the users begin to complain. And that's the direction that I'd like to get us to, is where we know that things are having trouble before they fail, and replace them or route the traffic in a different direction so that our students, faculty, and staff have no idea that there was a problem. That's where I'd like us to be, and I think we're moving in that direction.
Excellent. Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Jonathan Pearsall. He is the Associate Vice President and Chief Information Officer here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.